Human trafficking is a very real problem in Iowa and Illinois, but are we getting any better at spotting it and counting eagles as the birds start leaving us in the cities? Human trafficking is basically present-day slavery, whether it be sex trafficking or labor exploitation. And for those who think it only happens in the dark, here's a couple sobering facts. Iowa is third in the nation per capita for human trafficking. And in Illinois, four major pieces of legislation went into effect this year alone aimed at early intervention, recovery programs, the streamlining of support, and the addition of enhanced victims' rights protections. The Breaking Traffic Program, coordinated by Family Resources, has been at the forefront of stopping human trafficking in the cities. And we sat down with an advocate, known to most as Sarah Kay, who just received an outstanding anti-trafficking service award. So tell me a little bit about human trafficking, because a lot of people think, or don't think about it at all, or they think it's just kind of in the dark recesses of society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so a lot of times, human trafficking is happening right here in our community. You can come or go to school or work and still be trafficked. I was trafficked at the age of 21. Because of trauma, it led to drug and alcohol addiction. And that, because of the lifestyle choices, it led to homelessness. So thinking, what am I going to do to survive? I reached out to a local escorting agency. It was a woman that happened to have an apartment ready for me. She set up all the client appointments. She schooled me on what to say. She told me to get another job to hide the amount of cash coming in. And then I believe that I was free to come and go whenever I wanted. However, I was controlled by a cell phone, so I had to answer anytime she called.
Yeah, because a lot of people think that human trafficking, you're just held captive, literally chained to a room, but you were walking about, but still you had that connection that kept you under wraps, so to speak.
For sure. I even got another job and everything, but that was my connection, was the phone.
I think what's interesting that you were telling me before we started the recording was that you didn't even realize that you were being human trafficked at the time. Tell me a little bit about that. I mean, when did that discovery occur?
Sure. So it wasn't until I shared my story, maybe 6 years later, for the first time I shared my story with someone that knew the signs of human trafficking. And because she knew the signs, she told me that I was trafficked. It took me a while to process because I thought, you know, this is my choice. And that was my choice at the time. But then she said, but when was your choice taken from you? And it took me a lot of years of healing and working in this field to see that I was actually managed by another person, and there was a lot of coercion involved.
Because the person who's managing you, they're very good at what they do.
For sure.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, everyone always kind of wants to know, what are the warning signs? How can I help somebody if I see somebody, you know, in public? And you teach at, as you said, schools, social clubs, hotels particularly. Spotting it is very difficult when you yourself couldn't spot it.
Yeah, for sure. So would you like me to share
some of the signs? Yeah.
Sure. So maybe a youth that may be unusually fearful or gets violent when they're not able to answer their cell phone right away. Someone that may possess gifts or cash without an explanation of where they got those from. So maybe it's a youth that doesn't have a job, or someone speaking for them, having rehearsed lines, or someone refusing to separate from the person. Also, someone that may not be in control of their own bank account or legal documents, such as their birth certificate or passport, or sudden changes in mood or behavior, or having like an older boyfriend, girlfriend.
It was interesting also is that you said that you believe you're human trafficked from the age of 21.
the age, average age is so much younger. Mm-hmm. Children, well, younger, but I'm going to say 11 on.
Sure.
11, I think, to 14 is one of the big target ages. I mean, for you to be manipulated as an adult, it's obviously very easy for these people to manipulate a child.
For sure. So a lot of times traffickers prey on vulnerabilities. And a youth, their brain is still developing, and so it makes it harder for them to make sound judgment or think of consequences or even know that someone's manipulating them.
What groups have you spoken to so far? What type of audiences have you had?
So I do speak to youth in the schools. I also work with incarcerated women. I also work with people struggling with drug and alcohol dependency.
And human trafficking, a lot of people always think it's sex workers, and it's not. It's a whole range of manipulations of people.
For sure. So it's not just limited to sexual exploitation. Labor trafficking is also included, and this includes like domestic servitude, so working in the home as like nannying or house cleaning, also massage parlors, restaurants, factories, and debt bondage.
Because as you said, people may not even know that they're being trafficked at the time. And a lot of times it does, I would think, impact migrant workers or people who are not familiar with America who may think that this is normal because they had a tough enough time in their home country.
Sure. So a lot of people may think of undocumented immigrants as being labor trafficked, but however, women and children are also being labor trafficked.
Tell me what Breaking Traffic, which has been around for a number of years, what are the resources that they provide to, let's start with the person who's being trafficked. What is provided?
So we offer free and confidential services. We offer counseling and therapy, immediate shelter. We also provide medical, legal, and housing advocacy, whatever the individual is needing, both short-term or long-term.
And a person who believes that they might be human trafficked, we've got numbers on the screen right now pointing out some of the helplines from Family Resources and Breaking Traffic, as well as the state hotline, or the national hotline, I should say. Tell me exactly what happens if a person calls that number.
So if they call, we have a 24-hour crisis response team. And then somebody can, if they're, like, sometimes we'll go meet them at the hospital if they're, like, if they are coming out of a situation. Otherwise, if they call us, we do have advocates on call, and we do, like, a referral process. So they can call us, and then somebody will be dispatched to them, and it usually takes, like, 24 to 48 hours. But if it's a crisis, then it's shorter.
Now, you're extricating somebody from this manipulative person. Mm-hmm. They have no place to go. As you said, oftentimes they may be holding on to your ID or all of the information that you need to survive in society. How does that process work then? I mean, how do you get that back? How do they get their lives back?
Sure. So we work with them individually, and then we also have other resources and where we can reach out to see about getting their driver's license and helping them get back on their feet.
What do you say to a person who thinks that they're being human trafficked? How do you, I don't want to say get them to trust you, but that is obviously it. I mean, how do you get them to open up and explain what happened?
Yeah, so a lot of times it's building relationship, which can be tricky because also they're with grooming, they're, you know, they also build a relationship. But one of the things...
Well, and I'd assume they're in denial as well, oftentimes.
For sure. So educating, educating on the signs of trafficking, and then also helping them to know who is a safe person
right.
and who's not a safe person.
What do you tell people when you speak to those groups? I mean, do you tell them that this is a problem that is far bigger than you think it is?
Not really. Yeah. A lot of times I think people think of human trafficking as this big, big thing, and they are scared to even get involved, or it may seem too big, but actually it really, for me, it just took someone listening and knowing the signs. I think that it's more simple than we think, and there is help, there are resources, and there are people that care that can help.
Well, you just got awarded for volunteering at the state capitol in Des Moines. You received your certificate and were with Maggie Tinsman, who's the founder of Breaking Traffic. How many people do you think that you have helped so far by your advocacy? How many people do you think you have brought out from the shadows?
It's hard to tell. I'm not for sure. Maybe like 300 to 400. I could be off, but.
But that's pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's got to make you feel good.
Yeah, it does. It's not. It's definitely a team effort. It's not just me, but I'm just very grateful to have the support that I had. And you know, we've all Maggie Tinsman and the NAHT, which is Network Against Human mm-hmm. Trafficking, and Teresa Davidson, like we're she's with Chains Interrupted. And we just, you know, and Family Resources, we've all come together and joined the fight together. It's definitely a teamwork.
And I'd assume that some of the people that you've helped, you've kept in touch with. I mean, do you have a person who a success story? I mean, tell me about somebody who really what you were able to change their life around.
So I'm not really.
You don't have to be specific. Okay. I mean, somebody is obviously that they're doing much better now.
Yeah. I mean, there are some people that we've worked with that we still stay in contact. One went through a program, a year long program, and graduated and is doing well. And then we have another one that just had a baby, and she has other little ones, and she came from a trafficking situation, and with our funding we were able to get housing for her, and now she was able to deliver the baby safely and have somewhere for them to stay.
That's got to be, you know, I know you got the certificate, I know that you got awarded, but that's got to be much more of a reward for you as well as for the organization.
For sure. Knowing that they're safe and they're able to move forward is, that makes me happy.
Your advocacy, of course, has been going on for a number of months already. What do you see the future? I mean, do you think that there's, obviously, you're getting the word out, you're trying to mm-hmm. reach more people, you're trying to help more people. How do you think that's going to go in the months and years ahead?
Well, it's definitely, I feel like we're finally breaking ground, and it's great because I want as many people to know about the signs and about human trafficking so that, and especially youth, to give them the tools so that they can stay safe.
It is
preventable.
It is preventable. And the first part, I think, would be the recognition by the person themselves. So if somebody is seeing the phone numbers that's on the bottom of the screen and they're thinking of calling, what would you say directly to them?
That it can be scary, and sometimes you don't know how you're going to survive if you leave the situation, but there is help out there. There are resources, and it's totally worth it to leave everything behind and start a new life.
A much better life.
Yes.
And you've proven it, haven't you?
For sure.
Our thanks to Sarah Kay with Breaking Traffic in the Quad Cities. In a moment, the big Eagle count is over, but another is just beginning. That's just ahead. First, let's see what's on our events calendar as we head into this Valentine's Day weekend, thanks to Visit Quad Cities.
Check out the things to do this week in the Quad Cities. Start your week off at the Rock Island Public Library to watch the Deacons for Defense film, which is based on true events. Then, head to Circa 21 Dinner Playhouse to enjoy a hilarious murder mystery that everyone will love. Then, get ready for the Frost Fire Festival. Shop local craft vendors, eat delicious s'mores, and get creative with fun crafts. Then, enjoy a beautiful love story performed by Ballet Quad Cities at the Galvin Fine Arts Center. Finally, you can still enjoy the Freight House Farmers Market by checking out their winter market on Sundays. For more events like these, check out our events calendar at visitquadcities.com.
Each year, the Army Corps of Engineers joins forces with volunteers and others to help count the eagle population that lands in the cities each winter. Much of that count is just finished, but another survey of the raptors continues today in Rock Island. We're joined by wildlife biologist Kelly McKay, who's been counting these birds for years. So there's two major counts of bald eagles going on, one kind of ending with the Army Corps of Engineers. It's the annual one along the lock and dam system of the Mississippi River. It seemed to me when I, because they list the numbers, the watch is Wednesdays, right?
Well, the Corps at the locks, the lock masters do a weekly count at the lock and dams. That's not part of the national midwinter count that just is ending about now.
Yeah, exactly.
The national midwinter count, that consists of survey routes along major riverways all across the lower 48. So there are thousands of these routes all across the lower 48. That takes place in a two-week period in January. So those are two completely different things. The lockmaster counts, very suspect because, you know, they're not trained biologists. And you know, some lockmasters are really into it, and they're really, they really put in the effort to get an accurate count. Other lockmasters, they look out their window up and down, they're like, ah, there's about 20. So it
job done.
Job done. Check that off the box. Yeah, so it varies tremendously from one lock to the next.
But that's very true. That's certainly something I noticed. And it looks at adults as well as young eagles as separate counts. But what I noticed, or it appeared that the numbers are lower this year. Is that an area of concern, or is it weather related?
Yeah, well, all I can speak to, because the count is still going on, so all I can speak to are the seven routes that I run as part of the national midwinter bald eagle count, which is compiled by the Corps. I run seven routes that span 80 miles of the river between Lock and Dam 13 at Clinton down to Lock and Dam 17 at New Boston. So when I ran the routes this year about 2 weeks ago, I had 1,142 eagles in that 80 miles. To put that in perspective, typically most years, and I've been doing this count for about 40 years, most years, on an average year, I'm usually around 2,500 or so eagles.
That's a big difference.
Yeah, it's considerably less this year. It's just an 80-mile stretch.
Right, right.
And I would caution that you can't read too much into 1 year of data. Because when I did the survey this year, it was extremely mild. There was no ice cover.
Right.
The river was completely open. Eagles are widely dispersed. I think a lot of eagles were up north. They weren't even here. So, you know, I think that is largely to explain why the numbers were so low in my 80 miles. I suspect if I ran that same seven routes today, there'd be a lot more eagles
because
the weather has changed, as everyone knows.
Well, so that is the count for basically the Mississippi River, would I say the watershed, or?
Well, it's not just the Mississippi River. These are routes that are done all across the lower 48.
Okay.
So, you know, this has been going on for about 50 years. Started out, it was the National Wildlife Federation that compiled it, and then they turned it over to Audubon for a few years, and then Fish and Wildlife Service took it over, and then when the Fish and Wildlife Service split and the research component went to the USGS, they did it for a number of years, and then in the early 2000s, the Corps took it over. So the Corps compiles it, but it's largely these routes, these thousands of routes that are done all across the lower 48, are completely done almost entirely by volunteers.
So I mean, can you compare year to year to year if the compilers have changed and the volunteers have changed?
Yeah, you can compare because the same routes are run. So the same areas are surveyed year after year after year after year. And for the most part, the volunteers who are conducting the surveys are people like me. They've been doing it for decades.
Yeah.
You know, I started doing this with Elton Fox, and that's a name from the past here in the Quad Cities, when I was a teenager. And so it's largely the same people that collect the data. The people compiling the data, the compilers have changed. There's been a lot of different organizations that have compiled it, but the routes are the same. The data collection is the same. So I think it is a pretty valuable information.
The other area that you're focusing on is Milan Bottoms. Yeah. One of the things, and we've talked to you before in regards to the development, the commercial development that they have there, mm-hmm. your concerns about the nesting of eagles in that area of Rock Island and Rock Island County. You know of the study that was done that kind of helped the city determine that this construction should move forward. You say that's suspect, and you're continuing your research.
Yeah, I think suspect is a nice way of putting it. It's a joke, is what it is. The city has proven themselves to be utterly corrupt in this. The developers are corrupt in this. They keep saying there's no impact to eagles, and so the developers, Matt Stern and Jeff Eubanks, hired a company called Terracon to do an eagle project to assess nesting and night roosting eagles in Milan Bottoms, because those are two completely different things. Nesting is a breeding season activity. Night roosting is a winter activity. So Terracon went down. They did a one-day study, which any biologist knows you can't do a research project. Certainly you can't do a bald eagle research project in one day. So right off the bat, that makes their study very suspect. Second of all, the day they did their research project was May 6th. In May, and they found no night roosting eagles, not surprising. Bald eagles do not use night roosts in May. And it's like I tell people all the time, that would be like me going to your house when I know you're out of town and saying, well, Jim's not in this house. He obviously doesn't live here because he's not there the one day I was there. And I went there when I knew you wouldn't be there. That's exactly what Terracon did in this night roosting study. And they determined there are no night roosting eagles. We figured that was probably incorrect. They didn't bother to look at any of our data. We conducted one of the most intensive night roost studies that's ever been done in North America on night roosting eagles. It was an intensive six-year study that we did under contract with the Corps of Engineers. Took place from the winter of 2005-2006 through the winter of 2010-2011. So it is dated information. But they never even bothered to look at what we found. The Illinois DNR, who is, at best, the Illinois DNR has shown themselves to either be one of two things. Either they are staffed by the most incapable and unqualified individuals that there are. That's the best case scenario. Worst case scenario, they are utterly corrupt and they are not safeguarding the environment, the natural resources, or the biodiversity of Illinois. And I say that, I know those are strong words, and I say that because they bought in, they accepted the results of Terracon, a one-day study that was conducted at a time of year when eagles don't even utilize night roosts, and they never even looked at this very intensive project that was done for the Corps of Engineers over 6 years, one of the most intensive projects that's ever been done. So we decided we're not going to accept the suspect findings, and so we're conducting a much more intensive night roost study this year it's taking place one day a week, every week from the first week of January through the end of February, where we're monitoring, because our information is dated. So we wanted to know, is Milan Bottom still a night roost? Is it still a major night roost? And so one day a week, we're down there monitoring how many eagles are night roosting in Milan Bottoms. We've completed 3 weeks of the study so far.
I just have a few moments left.
Yeah.
In those 3 weeks, what have you found?
What we've found is Milan Bottoms is still a major night roost location. In the first 3 weeks, we've ranged from a low of 211 to a high of 317 eagles night roosting within Milan Bottoms. Part of this project, besides monitoring the night roost, we're also conducting a weekly population survey in what we call the local area. That's a 38-mile stretch running from Lock and Dam 14 at Hampton to Lock and Dam 16 at Muscatine. So we do that one day a week also. So every week we know how many eagles, approximately, that are wintering in the area. and we can compare that to the number that are night roosting in Milam Bottoms, which allows us to have a very good estimate as to what proportion of the local wintering eagle population is relying on Milam Bottoms as a night roost location, and therefore, how important is Milam Bottoms. And what we're finding is that anywhere from 40 to 67% of all the eagles wintering in the local area can be accounted for as night roosting in Milam Bottoms. That indicates how incredibly important Milam Bottoms night roost is to our local wintering eagle population.
What do you hope to use that information for?
We're not really sure because the city and the developers and the DNR seem like they've made the decision that they're willing to sacrifice the most important piece of eagle habitat in this region. It is by far, hands down, the most important piece of eagle habitat, and they've all indicated that they're willing to sacrifice that for a truck stop and a pot shop, because that's what it boils down to. That's this development, which consists of a truck stop and a pot shop, is going to be abutted right up next to the largest known night roost in the lower 48 states.
Will you continue to study once it's developed so that
we're
you find out the impact?
We're hoping to if we can continue to get funding, yeah.
Our thanks to wildlife biologist Kelly McKay. America is getting ready to celebrate its 250th birthday, and leading up to July 4th, we're talking to people in the cities about their role in making America the nation it is today. So many people have what's called a civic spark, the impetus that made them get involved in a way that makes a difference for all of us. We posed that question to the head of the Quad Cities Health Initiative, Nicole Karkner. What is your civic spark?
I enjoy solving big problems. I enjoy really thinking about how all the pieces of our community fit together. And this opportunity to work with the Quad City Health Initiative was one that really emphasized how we needed to partner, how we needed to collaborate, and how we all have a role to play in keeping ourselves and our community healthy.
Our thanks to Nicole Karkner, head of the Quad Cities Health Initiative. On the air, on the radio, on the web, on your mobile device, and streaming on your computer. Thanks for taking some time to join us as we talk about the issues on the cities.